Yo! What is up, guys? Welcome to episode 2 of Off the Top Dope. I am Michael, taking you back to some of the most and least dope moments in wrestling history. Today, we're going to be looking at one of the least dope things to ever happen to the wrestling industry. The complete destruction of WCW, the purchase by WWF, and then the WWF turning into the WWE and sort of having a monopoly for a very, very long time on wrestling on television. I mean, there was TNA, but TNA, it never really came close. And I'm going to try to do my best to try to cover everything, but there's a lot. So I'm going to have to try to gloss over something so it's not super long, because this is a lot to unpack. There were so many things that led to the death of WCW. I know a lot of people just like to say it was all Vince Russo, or it was Vince Russo and Eric Bischoff. People just hate Vince Russo, but the guy really hasn't done himself any favors retroactively, you know, looking back when he talks on it. Every time he talks, it just kind of sounds like he's making it up. Like, the story kind of changes each time, it seems. I don't know. That's just what I've gathered. But anyway, let's get into it. What killed WCW?
Off the top, dope.
Yeah. So, World Championship Wrestling, once a beloved powerhouse in the wrestling industry, Vince McMahon's nightmare for 83 weeks in a row, dead and gone. But what happened? WCW should never have failed. It was pretty inconceivable to like even imagine that just a few years earlier. But somehow it happened. It happened. It's history. Nothing can be done about it now. It's just dead and gone. It's a memory, unfortunately. A lot to unpack in this, but here we go. Number 10. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say this was one of the first nails in the coffin, but it was definitely one of the contributing factors to WCW just completely failing in the later years. And while it seems on the surface like a pretty sweet deal for advertisers and fans alike, it probably really should never have happened. And I'm talking about WCW going to a 3-hour Nitro. So here we are, 1998, in the midst of the Monday Night Wars, which saw WCW and WWF vying back and forth each week to see who would be the winner when ratings came out. And by this point, WCW has started to slip. They have lost hold of the 83-week lead that they had over WWF, and the executives at Turner thought they had an easy solution for this, and that was to go on an hour before Raw and continue for the duration of Raw, thus going unopposed for a first hour and then competing actively against Raw for the second 2 hours. They were really just about improving their bottom line, and Eric Bischoff was pretty much against this from the beginning because it's going to fail. What do you do for the first hour? You're already struggling to come up with stuff to fill 2 hours whilst competing against another promotion on another network, but now you have to write stuff for a complete additional hour. You have to fill that hour out. And the creative team at the time just did not really do that great of a job at filling that hour. I mean, sure, they had people watching because they were unopposed, but once that first hour was up, if people didn't like what they saw for that first hour, they switched over to Raw, and that happened a lot of the time. There were actually Nitros where the entire first hour didn't feature wrestling at all. Kevin Nash wrote an episode of Nitro, and yeah, the first episode featured no wrestling. It was just all story stuff. And then when there was wrestling, they would, you know, incorporate storylines in between, you know, like you do on a normal, you know, wrestling broadcast. But because they had to fill 3 hours, everything was stretched out, whereas everything used to be like more compact and precise, easily digestible. They sort of had to stretch everything out, and it was just a fucking mess. And then they actually dropped that third hour in 2000 when WCW started to really fall apart, because, you know, it was pretty much realized that it wasn't helping. It was probably doing more harm than good, but at that point it was too late. Number 9. All right, so now we're really starting to get into some of the things that really fucked up WCW. The creative team just really dropped the ball with a lot of people over the years. And one of the big things that was a giant nail in the coffin for WCW was that they failed to create any new stars. So let's say we're talking about, you know, the year 2000. The last big star that WCW had created on their own was Bill Goldberg, and that was in 1997. That was 3 years ago at this point. And we're still a year away from WCW just going away completely. But 3 years, that Bill Goldberg was the last big star they made. They had tons of talent on WCW, but they just showed time and time again that they had no idea what the fuck to do with them. And when they did start giving some of these younger guys a push, you know, the New Blood was fucking awesome, by the way. But when they started giving people in the New Blood a push, it was for, main event status, you know, going for the World Heavyweight Championship. When it really didn't make sense. Like, Billy Kidman had that feud with Hulk Hogan. Billy Kidman didn't need to go for the WCW title. That doesn't make any sense, but that's like, I get that that's, you know, the ultimate championship in the company. That's, you know, the big prize that everybody should be shooting for, but it doesn't make sense for Billy Kidman to be going for that. He was in the cruiserweight division. Elevate the cruiserweight division. When you look back on WCW, that's some of the best shit you've ever seen were those matches. Make that mean something. They just pushed that off to the side the entire time. I'm rambling a little bit here because that's something I feel very strongly about. But yeah, they made no new stars the entire end of WCW. I mean, think of who the top guys were at the end. The very, 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 very top guys. Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, Scott Hall in some respects, Diamond Dallas Page, Sting, Total Package, that's what he was called at the time, but Lex Luger, you know, Scott Steiner, these, you know, were names that had been around a long time. Hulk Hogan was still at the top. That guy has been at the top of wrestling since the 80s. He didn't need to be in the top anymore. You know, you want to push some of these younger guys. That's what New Blood was about, and New Blood was awesome, but it just, creative, I don't know, the booking just wasn't in their favor, really. And I think, you know, over time, a lot of people were just kind of like, why do we keep seeing, you know, these same old guys? Over on Raw, they were creating new talent all the time, all the time. New stars all the time. They took Rocky Maivia, made him into The Rock, made him a huge force in wrestling. Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, just... I could just go on and on. They had new stars all the time. The Attitude Era buried WCW completely. And WCW creative and the booking and everybody, just, they did not do anything to help themselves in this situation at all. Just wanted to do a little shout out to some of the talent in WCW that was completely underutilized and really could have been big stars. I'm talking, obviously, Rey Mysterio Jr. I mean, he did get a push. You know, he became like that giant killer. But yeah, Rey Mysterio Jr. Juventud Guerrero is probably one of the best high flyers ever. Canyon was really fucking good. Raven, obviously. Shane Helms. Shane Douglas. Chris Jericho was treated like a joke at WCW, and then he finally got the recognition he deserved when he got over to WWF. Chris Candido, Dean Malenko, Chris Benoit, Perry Saturn, Mike Awesome, Eddie Guerrero, Billy Kidman. I mean, like, half of those are household names at this point because of everything they were allowed to accomplish in WWE. But WCW creative, I don't know. They missed the ship so many times. Number 8. So it's been generally well received as an opinion among wrestling fans that towards the late 90s, very early 2000s, since they obviously didn't make it too far into the 2000s, WCW storylines were just bad. And what's crazy is I don't even remember them being bad at the time, but I was also 10 years old in 2000. So, I mean, what did I know? It made sense for pretty much everyone to have at least some storyline, like some reason that they were getting these matches that they had, and, you know, some driving force for winning the match other than, you know, victory. But when everyone on the show has to have a storyline, you can come up with some pretty shitty stuff, and a lot of times that did happen. Put together for no reason other than the fact that they both had black and white face paint, Sting and Vampiro were teamed up as a tag team initially, and then, of course, that wouldn't last long because then they had to feud with each other, and the feud just really made no sense. It was like Vampiro had all this darkness in him, and Sting wanted to show him the right way and stuff like that, but then, you know, Vampiro was just constantly complaining. They had a Human Torch match where Vampiro set Sting on fire and threw him off the Tron. Then Sting came back later in another match and beat him. And then the feud just sort of fizzled out. Like, there was no ending to the storyline. Then, like I was saying earlier, you had Billy Kidman challenging Hulk Hogan. They had a few matches where Hogan basically did the job for Kidman and just let him, you know, make him look like he didn't have all this experience, you know. I mean, Billy Kidman's a great wrestler, but give me a break. Then you had the New Blood basically taking everything from Diamond Dallas Page. You know, even Kimberly was against him. And then he pretty much just had nothing left, which, I mean, made a lot of people feel sympathy for him. But as a storyline, it's like, okay. Then you had the rebirth of the Sting and Hogan feud, except this time Sting was the heel and Hogan was back in his red and yellow, you know, Hulkamania stuff. And Hogan laid down for Sting, which that happened so many times in WCW, just like laying down for people. It was just stupid. There was that one point where the Wolfpack was formed and basically all of the good people from the NWO were in the Wolfpack. And then you had basically just like, you know, Vincent and like Scott Norton, you know, like the B and C players in the original NWO, just making like the original NWO just kind of look like a joke at that point. I mean, even Sting was in Wolfpack, and you also had that mysterious white Hummer driving around trying to take people out, and then they just dropped that for a year. They never talked about it ever again. Buff Bagwell and Lex Luger teamed up to be the Totally Buff tag team, and they had their sights set on getting rid of Bill Goldberg. So they had a match, it was a tag match, where the winning stipulation was that Goldberg could be fired. So obviously Totally Buffed won and Goldberg was fired, but WCW shut down shortly after, so Goldberg could never actually make a return. David Flair and Stacy Keibler's on-air wedding and her whole pregnancy thing. The Ultimate Warrior's entire WCW run was a joke. And then the fact that the entirety of the late 90s was made to make Flair look like a bitch the entire time. I don't know what the deal was. I don't know if it was just because he was too old of a name, but they just treated him like absolute dog shit. And that whole thing just now with me rambling on, naming stuff off, could have very well been written by WCW Creative. I mean, if it didn't make sense, there you go. Put it on Nitro. Number 7. So who would have thought that making disparaging comments about the company you work for could end up completely saving your career and working out totally in your favor? I am talking about when Eric Bischoff granted Raven his release. He had made some disparaging comments talking shit about WCW and the creative direction and just, you know, every single facet about the company, really, just making them look bad. And Eric Bischoff was pretty pissed about this. And in August 1999, he had a meeting with every contracted WCW wrestler saying that if anybody was unhappy and felt like they would be happier elsewhere, he would grant them their release. And Raven was the first to accept the offer. Now, Raven wasn't really a huge draw in WCW. I mean, he was a pretty good draw. He had been a huge deal in ECW, being the hardcore champion like 27 times. But Bischoff just didn't really see much merit in him, so he gladly took him up on this, but it was conditional. Raven couldn't just turn around and sign with WWE. He had to wait until the end of what would have been his WCW contract to run out. But Raven ended up signing back with ECW and appearing on ECW TV a week later. But when you really start to put that idea out there that you're offering people's release, or that people can leave, you know, maybe, you know, a lot of people, when they get under contract, they think that they're locked there for a long time. But when you start putting it in people's minds that they can leave, you know, that kind of really sets you up for failure. Not too long after this, Dean Malenko, Chris Benoit, Perry Saturn, they all left for WWE. Chris Jericho was already gone, but that has nothing to do with this. But you started seeing people less and less, and you'd see them pop up on WWF or ECW. The work environment in WCW was so chaotic and disorganized that people wanted out. And then when Eric Bischoff let people know that if they were unhappy, they could leave, I think that was like saving grace for a lot of people. And they never really looked back. And when you see people leave a company that everybody in the industry knows is paying a shitload of money, it starts to make other people think, do I even want to go there? Like, why would a guy like Raven leave? For all intents and purposes, ECW was, you know, third in the runnings, but they were very far behind. People weren't really getting paid at ECW at the time. Checks were bouncing left and right, or they weren't even getting checks at all. So when you see a guy who came from ECW go to WCW, and then the first opportunity he's given to leave, he does leave, it kind of makes, you know, other people hesitant, I'm sure. And then, as I'm saying, when you are letting people go, like Benoit and Dean Malenko, I mean, Perry Saturn, okay, but Benoit and Dean Malenko, you actually let them leave? That's just gonna hurt your business. Like, those are two of the biggest names ever in wrestling. I think Bischoff thought he was laying down the law and being tough, but I think he really kind of shot himself in the foot on that one. I mean, if people don't want to be team players, I get that you don't want them on the team, but you've got to keep, you know, you got to make sure you hold on to, you know, your Michael Jordans and stuff. When people are leaving, like Benoit, it's like, what the hell's wrong here? All in all, though, this was really just a symptom of the greater disease of mismanagement that was destroying WCW from the inside out. It's not even like they were just dying because WWF was beating them in the ratings. They were seriously imploding.
Number 6.
Much like Turner executives tying their hands and forcing them to make Nitro into a 3-hour event each week, Turner also cut off their balls, I guess would be the right way to say it. They weren't really allowed to do everything that they could have done. They weren't really ever able to push the envelope and get the edge that they needed to beat WWF, because, I mean, think about it, at the time, WWF had Degeneration X, and there's no way you can even pretend that that wasn't a huge threat to WCW. They had basically taken the concept of the NWO and expanded it and made it this huge, attitude-filled faction, so much so that the NWO couldn't even really compete with DX. Turner and USA were completely different companies. They allowed different levels of, you know, profanity and violence and things like that. I'm sure WCW Creative came up with a lot of edgy ideas that could have really stuck it to WWF at the time, but their hands were sort of tied, I'm sure. Turner was really sort of more of a family network, whereas WWF had more freedom to kind of do whatever they wanted because their networks knew they were never really going to do anything too out of control. I mean, they had put them in line a few years earlier when Brian Pillman showed a gun on TV like he was going to kill Stone Cold Steve Austin for trying to break into his house. And they had been put in line from that, so they knew that they would toe the line. They would do things that were provocative, but they weren't going to cross a line because they didn't want to have any more trouble again, because they almost lost their deal completely with USA over that. Whereas Turner never really let them even like approach the line. Like, I mean, they did some things that were like close, I guess. But even when WWF started beating them in the ratings, Turner never really let them get away with stuff that they probably could have on another network that would have really helped them be sort of equal on the playing field in terms of attitude and edge and appealing to the younger demographic of wrestling fans. and possibly even stealing some of ECW's audience. Both companies borrowed heavily from ECW, whether it be storylines, match types, and even talent, but WWF was definitely allowed to get away with a lot more than WCW was, and WCW definitely suffered for it. And in turn, we all sort of suffered in a way for about 20 years because WWE was really the only show in town.
Number five.
So by the late 90s, virtually most of America was online. The internet was being utilized frequently in a lot of homes, and there was a lot of wrestling fandom to be found online. A lot of forums, wet wrestling sites, and stuff like that. So you had a lot of people who were really smart to the business now. Everybody was sharing information and learning all the time. And definitely one of the worst things to come out of this was that you would start seeing people breaking kayfabe on air a lot. And it was sort of like a nod to like the internet people, like all these people on these wrestling forums. And one of the number one people who did this was Vince Russo. Vince Russo seemed to like love this shit. He would work this into stuff all the time. Everybody was breaking kayfabe in like their promos and stuff. They were just letting everybody know that this was all a work. It was all fake. And when you do that so many times, it's like, it starts to, like, yeah, we all know it's not real. We all know it's predetermined. We all know that you're athletes choreographing these matches together, if you're calling it in the ring, or maybe you have it figured out backstage. But for the most part, everyone's fine. Like, we know that. But when people would start coming out and just like actively throwing it in our faces and stuff like that, it starts to sort of become like, why are we watching this then? Like, if you're not even going to pretend that it's fake. And this wasn't even like just a Vince Russo thing. It sort of also became a thing while Bischoff was like in the head guy. He would have Schiavone and whoever was on commentary give away the results for Raw because Raw was taped. But while that might not be breaking kayfabe for WCW, that was sort of breaking kayfabe in general, I guess, because Schiavone mentioned that Mick Foley was going to win the title, and he said that he had wrestled there previously as Cactus Jack in WCW. So that was sort of taking the credibility of the character of Mankind and being like, well, that's not a real character because he also used to be this too. I don't know. It was just kind of shitty for the industry in general to be doing stuff like that. I don't think Schiavone wanted to do that at all. But what are you going to do when your boss is telling you that you have to do this, you know? But when you end up basically just letting everybody in on the fact that this is all predetermined, it's, you know, some of it's not live in Raw's case, or you're just coming out there saying like, oh, I was supposed to win this match. Like, Bash at the Beach 2000, there was some shit backstage. It was Heat. Hogan exercised his creative control clause in his contract for what was allegedly the first time ever. Who will ever really know about that? But it's said that it was his first time ever because he didn't want to lose to Jeff Jarrett. He wanted to win. He wanted to leave Bash at the Beach with the title. And Vince Russo was like, no, that's not happening. So anyway, match starts. Jarrett immediately lays down for Hogan. Hogan's like, what the hell's going on around here, brother? You know, and grabs the mic and he's like, Russo, is this your idea? You know, he's like, that's why this company is in the shape it's in, because of this bullshit. You know, whatever he said, it was pretty similar to that from what I remember. And then later Russo came out and cut that scathing shoot promo. A lot of times it's hard to tell, but I'm pretty sure that this was a definite shoot where Russo was talking about how Hogan exercised his creative control. And then he even admitted that originally Jarrett was supposed to win, but that didn't work for Hogan. That doesn't work for me, brother. So Hogan wanted to win, even though he knew it was bullshit and all this stuff. But yeah, Russo is just out there like letting the entire crowd and everybody who bought the pay-per-view know that this wasn't the finish that was written. It was, you know, done on the fly to sort of, you know, in your face Hogan. And by this point, they had already been doing stuff like this for a while, so it wasn't really too big of a surprise. But it's like, how do we get to this, like, where we're saying, that's not what was written down, that's not what the ending was supposed to be? Like, it just kind of ruins the whole thing. Like I was saying, we all know it's fake, but when it's being shoved down your throat that it's fake, it's, you know, you start to get to a point where you're like, well, if this is stupid, like why am I watching this then? If you're gonna get in the ring on the mic and cut a promo about how this is all fake, but I'm sitting out here invested in it, it's, you know, like, it just makes you, it's almost like making your fans look stupid in a way. And it really never did anything to help WCW at all. I don't think they ever had a Nitro where they were breaking kayfabe the entire time that they beat WWF. I mean, those days were long gone at that point. I don't know. It's a cardinal sin in wrestling. I don't like it. I don't think it should be done. Moving on. Also, just a side note, when Schiavone said that Mick Foley was set to win the title that night because that Raw was taped and they already had the results, 600,000 people switched from Nitro to Raw to see this, and a good portion of them never switched back.
Number 4.
So back in the day when Dusty Rhodes was booking, he was notorious for having these finishes where a babyface would seemingly win the match only to have the result completely reversed, basically screwing him and gaining a lot of sympathy from the crowd. And this was known as a Dusty finish. It was, you know, pretty much agreed upon that he had great ideas for matches and stuff, but he really had no idea for finishes. I mean, I don't know. That's true. That's what's said. But either way, it was a really popular move to have these Dusty finishes, but WCW really cranked the dial up and broke it the fuck off in the late 90s. They had so many swerves and no finishes that it was just so goddamn ridiculous. I mean, Eric Bischoff once said that the WCW crowd was pretty much conditioned when it looked like the finish was coming. They'd be checking up on the ramp to see who was gonna do a run-in because it was so commonplace that these matches would just end in fucking DQs and run-ins. And at the same time, in a lot of matches, they would say no DQ, but then someone would get disqualified, or they would think it was a normal, you know, I remember commentary would think, oh, this is a normal match, and then somebody would pull out a chair, and nobody got disqualified. It was just a shit show. Like, nobody knew what the fuck was going on around there at all. And here are some examples of this in action. Halloween Havoc 1999 featured Sting versus Hogan for the title, for which Hogan's entrance, his music played and he never showed up. Then Sting made his entrance, and then Hogan's music started playing again and he came out, but he was just wearing street clothes. And then when he finally made his way into the ring, he whispered in Sting's ear, and then of course, what does he do? He fucking lays down, because that's what everybody was doing at this fucking time. So, of course, Sting covers him and he retains the title in a 3-second long match. And then later in the night, Sting faced Goldberg in a strange main event that saw Goldberg defeating Sting. And though this was supposed to be a non-title match, Goldberg was declared the new WCW champion, which led to Sting arguing with referee Charles Robinson. And then he laid his ass straight out with a Scorpion Death Drop. And then the following night on Nitro, J.J. Dillon, remember that guy? He explained that though Sting never agreed to defend the title, it was now being vacated due to him attacking Robinson the night before. I mean, that is... So right there alone, that's two of your top guys both getting screwed, basically. Slamboree 2000 saw David Arquette face off against DDP and Jeff Jarrett in the three-tiered cage, which was pretty fucking awesome, I'll admit. It was inspired by David Arquette's movie Ready to Rumble. Arquette betrayed his friend DDP by smashing him over the head with a guitar so Jarrett could win the belt back. This came shortly after DDP had just been betrayed by Bischoff and his wife Kimberly. This was, you know, clearly another Dusty finish there. Jarrett laying down for Hogan at Bash at the Beach. That was fucking stupid. Albeit, it led to Russo cutting one of the sickest fucking shoot promos ever. I don't care what you say about Russo, that promo was sick. Then we have David Arquette winning the WCW Championship on Thunder, of all places. And a quick side note, I know a lot of people gave David Arquette shit over the years, but did you know that he donated all the money he earned from WCW to Brian Pillman's family? I mean, you gotta let it slide for that. Then we have Vince Russo booking himself to win the WCW title not long after Arquette won it. He reasoned that he had hoped his on-screen persona would be as successful as the Mr. McMahon character, which clearly you cannot beat that. And he also kind of wanted to see if he could get the same heat that Bischoff had with the NWO. Nash ending Goldberg's streak of 173 to fucking zero. You're going to end that at Starrcade 98. And this is the match where Scott Hall used that cattle prod on Goldberg to cost him the match. Another dusty finish there. Fucking Swerve City.
Swerve, why not drive?
And not only did Nash end Goldberg's streak, a week later on Nitro, Nash was supposed to face Goldberg for Nash's title, but Goldberg was arrested for stalking Miss Elizabeth. Do you guys remember this storyline? Miss Elizabeth said that he was stalking her because they turned up at the same places all the time. Working in the same company, you know, obviously you'd be in the same places. It was a joke. I mean, it was kind of funny. It was a little ridiculous, but because of that, Goldberg, you know, couldn't make it to the arena because when he got released from police custody, he couldn't walk across the street, I guess, to the arena because the police station was even shown to be right across the street. But anyway, so Hogan filled in for Goldberg and the match started with the two circling each other before Hogan poked Nash in the chest. That's right, the finger poke of doom. Hogan poked Nash in the chest, and Nash sold it fucking death style, and Hogan became the WCW champion once again. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that they were putting out at the time. And you know, so far all these things haven't been things that necessarily killed WCW, but they definitely all mutually hurt the credibility of the company. It made it super unpopular. They lost a lot of viewers over the years because of bullshit like this. I mean, but Hogan was right at Bash at the Beach when he said, "Russo, is this your idea? This is the reason that this company's in the damn shape it's in. It's because bullshit like this." And you know what? Amen, brother.
Brother. Number three.
So if you were to look up the history and the lineage of the WCW World Heavyweight Championship, you'd see in the beginning, things that made sense, you know, holding the belt for 6 months, holding the belt for a year. Hogan had it for a really long time, but hey, that's Hulk Hogan. You have to do it. It changed hands 4 times in 1996. I mean, that's not too bad. Then it dropped down to 3 in 97. Then suddenly you skip forward and then it changed hands 13 times in 1999. And just when you think it can't get any crazier, in the year 2000, the WCW World Heavyweight Championship title switched hands. Go ahead and take a guess real quick. Go ahead. Just pick a number in your head. If you don't know, pick a number. And I'll tell you how many times. And you'll see if you're right. 25. 25 times in 2000. 7 of those were in January alone, the first month of that year. I mean, realistically, if this was a real sport, I get it. You know, the title would change hands pretty frequently. But in professional wrestling, you have to keep the title on somebody for a bit to really make it matter, to like give value to that title. If you have it changing hands 25 times, that devalues the title. And you know, I guess you could draw parallels to like the inverse of how it is now, where Roman Reigns has been champion for 73 years now. And I guess in a way, WCW devalued their title by having it change hands so many times, like it almost meant nothing at that point. Whereas today, now Roman Reigns being champion for 217 years, I feel like that sort of devalues the roster because then it's like nobody can beat him. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's just my opinion on modern WWE. But you know, when you have the title changing hands that many times, like I was saying, it starts to mean nothing. It just becomes, you know, something you get in a normal singles match almost. I mean, people were winning it on Nitro and Thunder. I mean, you fucking know there weren't 7 different pay-per-views in January of 2000. So obviously, you know, it didn't mean that much to have it, you know, saved for pay-per-view events that people were buying. I mean, it's cool to have title matches on TV, but I mean, it's just, that's stupid to have it that many times. That means fucking nothing at that point.
Number two.
So like I was saying earlier, these aren't the things so far. These aren't the things that killed WCW. They aren't the nails in the coffin. If anything, they're the legs, which walked out to the woodshed. They're the arms that opened the door, and they're the hands that picked up the nails off of the shelf. God, I gotta admit, that sounded pretty good, didn't it? That was pretty good. Seriously, though, the coffin that WCW was buried in was constructed in such a way that it really only required two nails to seal the fate of the once great World Championship Wrestling. And the first nail was actually driven in on January 2000, the same month that had seven title changes. But it had nothing to do with that. It had to do with companies known as AOL and Time Warner merging. WCW was no longer just owned by Turner Broadcasting. It was now owned by these giant corporations. And if you thought that Turner had WCW's hands tied in a lot of creative decisions, just imagine how little you can do when you have corporations breathing down your neck. For pretty much all of WCW's existence at Turner, Ted Turner was really the only one who was advocating for WCW. If it hadn't been for him, they would have been off the air forever ago, because all of the executives there just fucking hated WCW. They hated wrestling, they thought it was stupid, they wanted it off the air, but they always had the lifeline of Ted Turner being there. Eric Bischoff has even said that he always sort of thought that Ted Turner would be there and that he could rely on him to sort of keep them going. But Turner Broadcasting was now owned by AOL Time Warner after they merged, and one of the first things they did was remove Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara. I haven't mentioned Ed Ferrara yet because I don't like him. But they were suspended from the creative roles in March 2000 after their edgy storylines caused almost constant uproar among the Warner executives. Russo was later brought back in a month later to work alongside Bischoff as a duo, but they never really gelled. And this was pretty much all for nothing anyway, as AOL Time Warner seemed hell-bent on getting WCW to tone everything down. They couldn't really do anything. They had their hands tied worse than ever. And during this time, Bischoff was trying to court a group of investors called Fusion Media to help him purchase WCW from AOL Time Warner, and just as the deal was looking pretty good, they had a verbal agreement, but nothing was signed yet. It was looking pretty good, but everything just turned to shit. Jamie Kellner took over control of the Turner Broadcasting Division at AOL Time Warner and railed against having WCW on their network at all, claiming, quote, "It would not be favorable enough to get the right advertisers to buy airtime." This was said despite Thunder being the highest rated show on TBS at the time. Unfortunately, Fusion Media got a little zealous in their purchase deal, and in their deal was the ability to control time slots regularly occupied by WCW programming, even if WCW programming did not air that night. Kellner not only rejected the deal, but went one step further. WCW programming was effectively canceled, and without a network to run WCW, Bischoff's partners at Fusion Media backed out of the deal. There's a story where Bischoff was actually on the beach when he got the call, and he, was pleading with them to give him 3 months to figure it out, and honestly, it just sounds like one of the worst days at the beach that didn't involve a shark. Before Fusion Media came along, there had been a lot of offers for WCW, but they'd all been rejected by AOL Time Warner. Until Nitro moving to 3 hours. No new stars. Bad storylines. Poor management. Turner Broadcasting. Breaking kayfabe on air. Swerve endings and no finishes. Too many title changes. AOL Time Warner merger. And now,
number one.
Here we are, guys, number one, the final nail in the coffin. Say what you will about Eric Bischoff, talk all your shit about Vince Russo, none of it matters. The number one thing to kill World Championship Wrestling was Vince McMahon. After the cancellation of WCW programming, Fusion Media was regrouping to come up with another deal to offer AOL Time Warner. But before they could, Vince McMahon swooped in and formed a new subsidiary called W Acquisition Company, and they purchased the World Championship Wrestling name, branding, championships, and all other remaining assets. The only thing they did not purchase was talent roster contracts. Everyone on the roster had a contract still with AOL Time Warner because the WWE did not purchase these, and a lot of them chose to just simply sit at home and ride out the remainder of their contract. When all was said and done, Vince McMahon had only paid $4.3 million for WCW. That's only about $7.3 million in 2024 dollars. Fusion Media's original offer was about $50 million. Could you imagine when they heard that Vince McMahon had scooped it up for $4.3 million? I sometimes wonder what the landscape of wrestling would look like today if Fusion Media had been successful in their offer and did take over WCW. They would have been owned by a new company. There would have been new management. They could have looked at their past mistakes and really learned from them. They could have bounced back and been bigger than WWE. There's even a chance that, who knows, they could have eventually turned around and purchased WWE from Vince McMahon. Just for fun, I actually looked at the attendance of WCW's last pay-per-view, which was Greed, which was just a few days before the purchase, and the attendance was 5,030 people. And if they had each chipped in $835, all of them could have owned WCW. Like, isn't that kind of crazy to think about? I mean, it would have been a total shit show having 5,000 people running a company, but that's such a low price. At this time, Buff Bagwell was taking home $700,000 each year. I mean, surely some of the boys could have, you know, pooled their money together and just bought it. Chris Jericho and DDP have even gone on record saying when they heard how much it sold for, especially like the video library, they were just like, why the fuck didn't I buy it? Like, they would have bought it. But nobody was expecting it to be that low, so obviously nobody was going to come in and make an offer that low. But without the TV deal, it really wasn't a lucrative decision for anybody other than Vince McMahon, because he already had a TV deal. But none of the networks that he was on wanted to run a WCW show. I mean, you know, all love for WCW aside, they had shown for years at this point that they were a failure. You know, I hate to say it, but, you know, nobody at USA wanted to have WCW on. They only wanted WWF programming. And because Vince McMahon was locked into contracts with the cable networks that WWF was on, he couldn't shop it around. He would have been in, you know, pretty deep shit. So all he really could do was just try to get that talent, get the WCW roster onto WWF programming. And it was relatively easy because WWF was now the only show in town. The final Nitro took place March 26, 2001 in Panama City, Florida. I've heard it said that nobody really knew what was going on. Nobody knew what the hell was going on. They felt like management wasn't really telling them anything. And then all of a sudden backstage, Shane McMahon pops up. And I imagine at that point they were just like, fuck. The Nitro broadcast opened up with Vince McMahon telling the WCW audience that he now owned World Championship Wrestling and that the fate of it was in his hands. Vince McMahon has claimed in years since then that this was just another night. This was just business. But I mean, you know, that smug son of a bitch was probably feeling so good right then. Without really getting too much into all the details, I mean, everybody's seen it at this point. Everyone's heard about the final Nitro. Booker T became the world champion on the final Nitro. And the episode was ended with Sting versus Ric Flair, which was fitting because that was the main event of the first Nitro. So it was sort of like a bookend, if you will, speaking of Booker T. So Nitro went off the air forever that night. A lot of the talent moved over to WWE. They got new contracts over there. And creative basically started that invasion angle where the WCW guys were basically jobbing to WWF talent. which was pretty shitty. But I guess WWF just kind of wanted to make it look like WCW was never good, was never a problem for them, even though they lost the ratings war for 83 weeks in a row, which is famous now. There are probably so many details I'm leaving out, but I just kind of wanted for this last one just to sort of, I mean, it's pretty gloomy, you know, I just wanted to let the feeling be there. WCW was gone. It was never supposed to fail. It shouldn't have failed. There were so many things that caused it. So many things that helped with the decline of its popularity, and they were never able to recover from it, unfortunately. And like I was saying earlier, I just can't help but wonder what the landscape of wrestling would look like now. Like, what would wrestling be now? Would there be AEW? I love AEW, but I imagine that if WCW had gotten their shit together, there probably wouldn't be a need for it. There probably would be no TNA, because there wouldn't have been a need for it. I think it's possible that it would still probably just be WWF and WCW. Although it probably still would have been changed to WWE, because they had been fighting with the World Wildlife Fund for a long time about that. But yeah, that's basically it, guys. 8 things that caused WCW to lose their ground, lose their footing in the Monday Night Wars, lose popularity, lose integrity. And the 2 things that really killed World Championship Wrestling: the AOL Time Warner merger and Vince McMahon swooping in and dominating his competition. And it is truly one of the least dope things to ever happen in professional wrestling.